Wusstest du, dass TK Maxx immer die besten Markendeals hat? Duftkerzen für alle, Sportoutfits, stylische Pieces für dein Zuhause, Designer-Handtasche, check, check, check. Bei TK Maxx findest du große Marken zu unglaublichen Preisen. Psst. Im Onlineshop auf tkmaxx.de kannst du rund um die Uhr die besten Markendeals shoppen. TK Maxx, immer der bessere Deal im Store und online.
Most incredible comebacks in NBA Finals history.
Welcome to the Sport Passion Podcast.
He shoots, he scores!
Here is your host, Lars Marendorf.
Hello and welcome to the Sports Passion Podcast. There was a coaching change last week, but that was not your usual coaching change where a team fires a coach who's lost the locker room and who's just not being able to talk to his team. That coaching change felt different and it was a big surprise. And I reached out to someone who knows that team in depth. And so after a short break, we will have Murat Ateş, who's covering the Winnipeg Jets for The Athletic, to talk about Paul Maurice and everything Winnipeg Jets. Usually an NHL coach gets fired or his contract ends. I can remember Patrick Ra stepping down as a coach right before the season, but I can't remember something happening like what we saw last week in Winnipeg, where Paul Maurice stepped down and resigned right in the middle of the season. And I think it's a good reason to call someone who's been on the show before and who knows the Jets in and out. And I'm very happy to welcome back, and hopefully this time I'll pronounce it right, Murat Ateş from Winnipeg, and he's covering the Jets for The Athletic. Welcome, Murat.
Lars, thank you for having me, and you pronounced it exactly right. Thank you so much.
Okay, so before we go into Paul Maurice, I will go back a little bit at the beginning of the season. I had the Jets rated right behind the Colorado Avalanche in the Central Division, and the season start for the Jets looked promising to me. They were sitting at the top of the division right after beating the Edmonton Oilers on November 17th. They had a record of 9-3-3, and yeah, like I said, leading the division and right in the playoff mix there, maybe home ice, maybe a deep playoff run. And then some things must have happened. What went wrong after that, I would say, good start for the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, I think whenever there's such a horrible slide as what happened with Winnipeg losing five straight games, and then after that time, they were really unable to string wins together, I feel like usually it means there's a combination of multiple things at hand. And one of them for me is that I don't think Winnipeg was ever quite as good as 9-3-3. You know, their special teams were struggling. They were very good at 5-on-5. Connor Hellebuyck was playing mostly pretty well. And I think that was good for an above average team, you know, maybe a top 10 team. But to be leading the division with space at that time, I think maybe it was a little bit flattering to how the Winnipeg Jets had played to that point. At the same time, for them to end up losing five straight, I think that there were times during that stretch when they were actually playing pretty well. And the biggest changes, I mean, from the offseason to now, we've talked about this before, Brendan Dillon and Nate Schmidt, Winnipeg's defense had been such a sore spot for the last couple of seasons, to go out and make those upgrades and essentially begin the season with a complete roster. You know, that hadn't happened in Winnipeg ever since Dustin Byfuglien's departure. So there was so much optimism. They get out to that 9-3-3 start. Everybody's feeling good. But I think there were still some moments where you saw, you know, a star player like Mark Scheifele, not yet going offensively and struggling defensively quite a bit as well. His offense has really picked up since that time, but his defense continues to give some back. Brendan Dillon has been good and at times struggled as well. Nate Schmidt, the exact same sort of thing. Overall, Winnipeg has been a pretty good team, and I don't think it was catastrophic. I don't think catastrophe is what leads to Paul Maurice's exit from the team or the extra microscope on them right now. But for whatever reason, and we can get into this with the coaching discussion, they weren't able to put everything together and keep it that way for any consistent stretch of the season so far. And I think that after having added Dillon and Schmidt, knowing that there's only 3 years left, I mean, this year plus two more for Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Connor Hellebuck's contracts, you know, there was a sense of urgency in Winnipeg that, you know, pretty good wasn't good enough. They're expecting more. And I think that that's what the push will be for from here to the rest of the season as they try to get back into the playoffs.
And I always try to follow all the teams, but obviously from overseas and with the time difference, you don't get all the information there and you don't have the same focus on all the teams. So I was as surprised probably as you could be that Paul Maurice stepped down there. For you, as someone who is covering the team on a daily basis and traveling with the team sometimes, how sudden was this news that Paul Maurice resigned there?
Well, it was very sudden for me in terms of its timing. The concept of it happening was not a shock to me. And the reason why I say both of those things is true is I've perceived and I've been under the impression that since probably late last season, Paul Maurice's, I'm going to call it joy level in terms of, you know, coming to the rink every day, dealing with all of those sorts of things, had started to slip a bit. I think after, you know, had he been the coach heading into January, he would have celebrated, you know, his 8-year anniversary as Jets coach. That would have been second longest tenure. Well, he had been the second longest tenured coach in the National Hockey League behind only John Cooper in Tampa Bay, who's had so much success, including two Stanley Cups. You know, I think that a combination of how long he had been around in Winnipeg, a little bit of staleness on his part in terms of how he felt, a little bit of staleness in terms of his team as well, because after his resignation, I thought my favorite quote about it was Andrew Kopp, you know, Winnipeg, a really important player on the team, talking about how it wasn't that the team had become too comfortable, but it had been a long time since they really knew how to be uncomfortable. So I think a lot of the boundaries, that pushing, that constant striving to get better, had sort of begun to slip from, you know, the coaching staff downwards. And I think that's natural and normal to happen after so much time with the team. So this feeling or this discussion, I think, has been in my mind since towards the end of last season. Then throughout the off season, there's a I think it was a 3 or 4 day delay. I'm not sure if that's the exact number, but there was a few day delay between Winnipeg getting swept by Montreal and doing its exit interviews. And that was substantial. That meant something. That meant there was something going on. And I think that my understanding of that time period and even the weeks that followed was there was a lot of soul searching. Paul Maurice, number one, but also speaking with Kevin Cheveldayoff, Winnipeg's general manager, Mark Chipman, the chairman of True North, who's a hands-on owner as far as NHL owners go. I think there were a lot of discussions about what's the future going to be like. And that would, I think that, including Paul Maurice not returning, I think would have been an option. But optimism won the day. They made the upgrades. They improved the defense. The team looked complete. And Paul Maurice certainly has the respect of the leadership crew and the ownership in Winnipeg. So I think the decision was made collectively to go after it one more time. And then early season struggles, a sense on his part that the message wasn't getting across, you know, a continued, I want to say, almost lack of accountability where I point at Mark Scheifele's defense. He could make some pretty horrendous mistakes and still get trotted out for an awful lot of minutes. There were sort of signs that things were stagnant. So the idea, again, and I'm sorry for the monologue, but the idea of a coaching change, not a shock, that it was his decision specifically at this time, on Friday morning as it was for us, that felt sudden to me. I didn't anticipate that. I thought that it might be a group decision portrayed exactly the way that we had it, Paul Maurice stepping away, but I thought if we saw something, it might be after the season. I didn't expect it so soon. And I think that speaks to the sense of urgency on all parties to try to get something out of this season. They put a lot of upgrades and effort into improving.
Don't feel sorry for pointing out a lot of good topics there and referencing a lot of some quotes there as well. I heard parts of the press conference. I heard also parts of the quotes from the team there as well. I think he painted a pretty good picture about not being able to get team over the hump there when he said that they are rolling a stone up a hill and he can just get the team to a certain point and it doesn't change now. In 2018, they reached the conference finals and they were a team, I think the Hockey News picked them as one of the future Stanley Cup winners, and they always felt like a team that just needs the next switch. And I thought that last season, after they swept the Canadian, they didn't sweep the Canadians, obviously they were swept, but they swept the Oilers, and I thought, okay, now at least they can get back to the conference or whatever final you would call it, the final four there, and then they can maybe get that next step. And you mentioned that, and Paul Maurice also talked about it, how empty or whatever you would call that he felt from those bubble games, from those seasons under COVID circumstances. Was that also due to the way they went out in that playoffs? And he realized, okay, when you get swept, that is something substantial. You can lose a series, but getting swept, I would always say, is something different there.
Well, I do think that was a substantially painful way to exit. And maybe not just the fact that they were swept, but Winnipeg's complete inability to generate anything against Montreal. Those were four fairly well-controlled games by the Canadiens. You know, I think that Winnipeg was in over its head a little bit, and certainly part of that would be the Mark Scheifele suspension, because, you know, I criticized his defense, but boy, does he help the Jets win games. He certainly creates offensively quite a lot. Dylan DeMello had been playing a major role. He was the defenseman promoted to play beside Josh Morrissey, and they had played against McDavid and Draisaitl, and yes, they probably got away with a penalty or two that should have been called, but they managed to squeak their way out of having McDavid and Draisaitl hurt the Jets too much during that previous series. So to have DeMello get hurt game one, first shift, I believe, and then Scheifele suspended after that, it was tough. Still, Winnipeg was completely unable to get anything going after that. And even that first game Montreal was in control of. So that may have a lot to do with it. I imagine that would have been crushing. It's interesting to me as well, now I'm thinking about it. You know, this most recent season, I would not have predicted a deep run from the Jets. Had they beaten Montreal, gosh, I thought, you know, Vegas would have been a bit tough for them to get by. The previous season as well, essentially ever since Bufflin departed, Trouba was traded, pardon me, to New York. Neil Pionk was a great add, I should say. But Tyler Myers, Ben Chiarot, all of a sudden Winnipeg, you know, had spent 2019-20 and 2020-21 with a really depleted defense core. And I didn't expect personally the Jets to make deep conference final type playoff runs in those seasons. But going back, you mentioned that 2018 Western Conference final run. Well, the following season, 2018-19, the Jets had all of those same horses just about and all of the same strengths. They stormed out of the gate. It was December. They were towards the top of the conference, but they struggled mightily in the second half. And, you know, there seemed to be some chaos within the dressing room. I think that people got frustrated with different ideas about how to right the ship. You heard the following season, you know, Blake Wheeler told me in an interview, he didn't necessarily feel like he was the best version of himself the previous season as a leader, as a person, and on all fronts. There seemed to be some turmoil around that team because they were so good on paper, so good for half a season, and they kind of fell apart there. And that's kind of an unanswered story from Paul Maurice's tenure as well that I just want to throw into the conversation, because I think that they genuinely reached a wonderful height in 2018, and their inability to take that next step will be a mark of Paul Maurice's tenure. Something about that 18-19 season still sticks out to me even more than what's come since then, because the defense on that team was so good, and close to, you know, the team that has started this season kind of struggling, has been upgraded and patched almost back to that old quality. So I think that I see a little bit of a parallel in it, and I'm not sure if I'm stretching to draw it.
So that's a pretty good summary of the hockey legacy of Paul Maurice, but something else is his legacy in Winnipeg, which is way more than just him being a coach. And you had, in your article, you had one personal anecdote in there where he extended the news conference or the press conference because he pretty much felt that you had another question to take. And I was fortunate to at least be in one media scrum. I think it was in Vegas in that 2018 season. And he was a real, he was working with the media. He was honest. He was answering every question that was asked to him. He gave thoughtful and long answers to some of the questions. And could you just give a perspective on how the work as a journalist with him was? Because I think that he is one of the best coaches when it comes to talking to the media. There are other guys. I mean, I always point to John Tortorella as how you should not be as a coach. and I think Paul Maurice is the exact opposite of that, at least regarding the media. I've heard better things about Tortorella behind the scenes. So he probably doesn't show that. But how was your personal experience with Paul Maurice?
Well, I just think that there are so many reasons why, you know, that go into him being such a strong media presence. And, you know, to start with the story that you mentioned, you know, it was one of my very first days on the Jets beat. It was towards the end of a long press conference that he'd been giving. I was trying, you know, very hard to catch the attention of the PR staff to grab a microphone to ask a question that I wanted to add. And nobody seemed to be noticing me. Nobody seemed to be noticing me. Even the journalists in front of me, I was patting him on the back and he was listening to the answer. He didn't seem to notice either. So I thought, oh goodness, I missed my chance. One of the PR staff members calls out, okay, thank you everybody for coming. We'll see you tomorrow. And everybody stands up as if to leave. And the only person who's not moving is Paul Maurice behind the podium saying, hey, Murat, I thought you had something you wanted to ask as well. And then he gave me, you know, a completely thorough, thoughtful discussion of the question that I asked afterwards. And that was, I think, maybe our first interaction. It may have been our second or third, I'm not sure, but it's the formative one for me, the very beginning that sort of set what the respect level was going to be like. And it maintained, it continued over the years. First of all, I think he's a genuinely empathetic person and wants to do well by people. I think that's part of why he was so good to deal with media-wise. I think that, I mean, his parents were teachers, and I think he takes a teacher's tone behind the podium oftentimes, especially with a guy like me, where I'm asking these really analytical questions. How does this system work? What, you struggle to get this type of chance set up from the slot. What's happening there? And he would usually take sort of a teaching tone, which I really appreciated. And he's so articulate to express those things. So those combinations of things already go into a fantastic media presence. He's funny, he's charismatic, he's witty. But then also, you know, earlier on in his career, when he spent some time out of coaching, he ended up doing media work with TSN in Canada. And I think that time really drove this sense of empathy for what we go through on our end of things. And he always wanted to give us something. Like you say, you know, when in that scrum that you were part of, you know, I imagine it was like this. Even if, you know, a question was tough or maybe he didn't agree with it, he would try to give you something that you could use. And I just thought that in terms of his media presence, I can't imagine anybody being better than that. And but because of that, because of the respect he showed early on, some of the memorable banter we had. One time I got a little bit too close to the core of something they were trying on the PK, and he joked about taking away my laptop and slashing my tires, like all in good fun. You know, I'm genuinely going to miss that element of Paul Maurice and having those day-to-day conversations.
You're very good in analytics. And I would ask you now, if you analyze the team and if you were the coach looking ahead, and Dave Lowry now obviously is the head coach, what would you do or what do you expect Dave Lowry to do. There have been two games so far. The first one was a loss against Washington and then another win. So, yeah, mixed results, but it's just two games. So what are you expecting from Dave Lowry, and what would you do in his shoes if you were the coach?
Well, the first thing that I think is important to think about with Dave Lowry is he was part of the coaching staff for this year and last year. He was an assistant coach. If he was holding on to any absolutely brilliant ideas, he would have brought them up in coaching meetings over the last year and a half.
Should
have. Exactly right. So I'm not expecting sweeping changes, at least not immediately, from Lowry. I think that the continuity there in terms of him being a face that the players know will be a big part of what his bosses are looking to get out of him. But at the same time, he is a fresh voice. He does have his own ideas. I think that one of the most important things he can do is instill a sense of accountability, where minutes are extremely correlated to performance. And I thought that that was something that Paul Maurice got away from towards the end of his tenure, where Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, and Kyle Connor, you would always eventually see them reunited and given enormous minutes, whether they were succeeding in them or not. And I think that with the emergence of Pierre-Luc Dubois in Winnipeg this season, well, Scheifele has company as far as top centers go, and he has competition as well. So I think that's an important thing that Dave Lowry can take charge of, is really promoting Dubois. And, you know, presently, I believe we'll see what the lines come out of the holiday break. But, you know, with Dubois, Kyle Connor, and Evgeny Svechnikov, that's been the most recent combination. If they're going, then they should be number one. If it's Scheifele, Ehlers, and Paul Stastny going as they were against St. Louis, then, you know, then they should be the ones to be promoted and really make that really apparent and accountable for everybody. I think that's a big one. There's some small details we've already seen change. Connor and Scheifele have switched spots on the power play, so they're each on their off wing, which means they're open for one-timers. And I think that's really important because I think the best power plays in the NHL, each player is a threat in more than one way. And certainly Connor and Scheifele can make plays and set up teammates and they can make some incisive passes. But to be open to one-timers now finally gives them a shooting option, a shooting threat as well, so they don't have to corral the puck and then shoot. That's a minor one that might not even be Dave Lowry, because Jamie Compton had been away from the team, and despite participating in video meetings for special teams, which is his role, I mean, he was back with the team for the first time on that Friday before the Washington loss. So that's a simple tweak. We've seen a couple of simple tweaks as well with Dave Lowry following a Jets penalty kill. He's overloaded a line with, I think, Scheifele, Dubois, and Ehlers to try to counter-strike a little bit, because oftentimes a power play will involve a team's best players, and oftentimes you'll get a third or a fourth line shift from a team after their power play. So I like little things like that so far. But the single biggest thing for him, I think, is that human-to-human accountability, where minutes get shaved if, you know, Scheifele doesn't back check, or minutes get promoted if Pierre-Luc Dubois takes over games, or if Andrew Kopp and his son, Adam Lowry, have success in a matchup capacity.
So accountability will be one of the big topics there. And I mean, you mentioned a lot of things there with for example, the critique for Scheifele getting more minutes. And you pointed out the improvements or the changes, at least. Maybe that's going to be an improvement on the power play. One thing I was wondering about, and you said something about that as well. Sometimes the assistant coach is responsible for special teams, and the power play is middling, 14th in the NHL, but the PK is awful. They are just ahead of Vancouver and Arizona there. So who was responsible for the PK, and what could lead to changes there? Because you're not going to reach the playoffs if your PK is 30s in the league, I would say.
Yeah, you know what? It was a few weeks ago now, and I sort of calculated it. If you compared Winnipeg's PK success rate to what the league average was, and I think at the time Winnipeg was in the 50s or maybe low 60s, the league average was, I think, close to 80. And you project the total number of power plays Winnipeg was on pace to give up. The difference in goals that Winnipeg was on pace to give up compared to average, not the best, but compared to average, would be enough goal differential to swing a team from first in the division to missing the playoffs.
Right.
and that's just on the PK. For me, that's incomprehensible. That's too much to be giving up. And then, you know, officially, I believe that's Jamie Compline's responsibility as well. Special teams falling under him. Certainly every coach would have a say in the PK. At the beginning of the season, a little bit of absolutely everything went wrong. Connor Hellebuyck gave up a few goals you wouldn't like him to give up. The crease clearing, both before the shot and after a shot when there was a rebound at play. Well, the Jets had, you know, brought in Brendan Dillon, a big, I think he's 6'4", physical player who's known for being able to clear the crease. Didn't have success in that role early. He's been getting better. Logan Stanley plays a tremendous amount of PK minutes. He wasn't tying up sticks, clearing pucks either. And it, singling out those two guys because they're big, but Winnipeg wasn't having success there. The Jets had a horrendous face-off numbers at first, especially when Riley Nash was playing big minutes on the PK, with Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp taking more of the face-offs as time goes by. It's getting a little bit better. Same with Paul Stastny's return to health. That improves things as well. There was sort of a revolving door of forwards on the penalty kill, not all of whom were fast enough to get the job done. Riley Nash was one, to be sure. The Jets have sort of been loath to use, say, a Nikolai Ehlers who plays with tremendous speed. I don't know that that's a great fit, but younger player like Jansen Harkins, who's killed penalties throughout his career, who has the speed and the tenaciousness and the shot blocking. It seemed that the personnel wasn't fast enough to apply pressure at the right time. And at the same time, they didn't seem to have the system figured out to stop seam passes from beating them. There's a little bit of absolutely everything early on in the season. Now where we're at with the Jets penalty kill, you know, they have, I believe they've yet to give up a goal under Dave Lowry. I think that's a coincidence. I don't think he breathed magic into the thing, but in recent times they've improved. And I think that part of this was Riley Nash's exit. I think part of this is Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry playing even more minutes than before. They're the strength up front. I think the clears and the crease clears and getting the puck out of the zone has improved a little bit. Hellebuck's improved a little bit as well. But really, what Winnipeg needs to be able to do is protect its own blue line better, give up less free entries. And then when in structure, know when to stay compressed and give up, you know, as few seam passes as possible, but also when to step up that aggression to pressure pucks on the wall, pressure contested pucks, put a little bit more pressure on the puck carrier at certain times to stop those free shots from coming in. And I think that if there's one word that sums up all of the changes that we've seen in the last week or so, it's just a little bit more aggression from them. So hopefully for the Jets' sake, that turns into continued better results, because like you say, it's been awful, and the sum total of it is still quite awful on the season.
And as always, you checked some of my other questions there as well regarding players who might get more playtime, who might get a bigger role there. Do you see anything happening on the trade front there?
On the trade front? Sorry,
yeah, on the trade front. Do you see any players who might be on their way out? I mean, there are not a lot of... Well, there are some minor contracts where players are not signed for next year. You mentioned Pierre-Luc Dubois, but I would expect them, especially the way he's playing this year, to want to re-sign him. So I don't see any big names being on the trade market, but maybe you got a better feeling for that and see someone who could be headed towards another team?
Well, I think Winnipeg would really have to continue to struggle. I mean, right now they're on the outside of the playoff picture looking in. You know, they're outside of that wild card race. But I think the belief is in Winnipeg that they've added enough quality to their roster. Again, I'll reference Brendan Dillon and Nate Schmidt. Their defense is a really solid top six. Their forwards have depth. So I think that the expectation is that they'll be able to, under Dave Lowry, pull together, string some wins back together, pull back into that playoff picture. But if it goes the other way, if it goes horrendously the other way, and it begins to look like a lost season, the one player whose future I wonder about a little bit is Andrew Kopp. He's a pending unrestricted free agent. And certainly, I think that he's played most of his decisions in terms of contracts throughout his career to sort of give himself a chance at unrestricted free agency as early of an age as possible. At the same time, Winnipeg values him. He values Winnipeg. The relationships are not strained. They may be looking to re-sign him depending on what the dollars are, you know, for an extended time period. He can be an extremely important two-way player to the Jets, one of their best defensive forwards, and he's been adding offense. I think he scored at something like a 57-point pace over the last season and this season. So there's a lot to like in the player, but his contractual situation makes me wonder if Winnipeg's season goes off the rails, does he get moved for futures? Not so sure about that. I honestly think they'll look to try to keep him in some way. The other important thing to acknowledge is that Winnipeg is in at long-term injured reserve, you know, first with Brian Little to get cap compliant at the beginning of the season. They moved Brian Little to long-term injured reserve. And that means that they're not accumulating cap space. Any trade they make, any amount of dollars that they acquire have to also leave the roster in some way, shape, or form. So I think that in terms of additions, let's say that Winnipeg goes on a run and now all of a sudden they're looking like the contenders that they're supposed to be heading into that trade deadline. I don't think there's room to add either. I think that the massive work was done in the offseason. It will be done again in this coming offseason. The only thing that could possibly change that is if Blake Wheeler's rehab from his knee injury takes longer than expected. I'm expecting him to return to the club in January. So any advantage of him being on LTIR, which he is presently, will go away because you have to clear the cap space away for him to come back to the team. If for some reason he ends up missing the full season, like Nikita Kucherov last year, and I really don't think that's going to happen. But if it did, then there's some room to go shopping, and that's where you'd see that. So a long way of saying, here are all the detailed reasons why I don't think Winnipeg's going to be major players between now and the trade deadline.
Yeah, there are a lot of teams that would have to do some complicated things to improve on the trade market. So Winnipeg, for me, also seemed like one of the teams that is set, and they are either going into the playoffs with this team or looking to change the team in the offseason. And that would be, as you check the Blake Wheeler question there as well, that would be my last question now. After the season, how is your feeling right now? Will Dave Lowry be the head coach also after the season, or are the Jets looking for a more or a bigger name, and they just said, okay, right now it's not the ideal situation. Someone like Bruce Boudreau is off the market right now, so we will stay with the guy who knows the team. Maybe he can turn the ship around, and then in the summer we'll be looking for a bigger name for the head coaching position.
Yeah, I think Dave Lowry's future depends a lot on what we see between now and the end of the season. Because I'm expecting the Winnipeg Jets to engage in a proper coaching search, in a proper, you know, throw the umbrella wide, look at who's available, you know, create a short list, interview those people. I expect that to happen almost regardless of what happens for the Jets season from here on out. And I believe Dave Lowry is going to be a candidate. I mean, they certainly like the guy. They certainly value him. And that's why they gave him the interim position for the rest of the season. So if we're looking at a playoff run, a playoff position, some sort of redemption in the season storyline, Dave Lowry has to be considered, you know, one of the front runners for that job. At the same time, there are, you know, qualified coaches with recent NHL experience out there. I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets show at least vague interest in Travis Green out of Vancouver. There's also the interesting case of coach Pascal Vincent, who was Manitoba's head coach, who was an assistant with Winnipeg in the past, who I think was partially being groomed to be an NHL head coach of the future at some point, but this summer signed an assistant coaching contract with Columbus and joined that team, probably because, or possibly because, this is an inference, I don't know this to be the case, because it seemed as though his path to NHL head coaching in Winnipeg was blocked because Paul Maurice was coming back. So I wonder about him as well. If not now, perhaps in the future. I think he's going to be a head coach in the NHL someday, and Winnipeg would do well to consider him too. So I think that the search will be thorough and will cover a lot of ground, and Dave Lowry will be considered. His stock will go up or down depending on what he's able to accomplish between now and that point.
At WPG Murat is the Twitter handle. As always, Murat, thanks a lot for the insights you covered everything I had and much more. A lot of details there, a lot of great stuff, and I highly recommend following you, and I highly recommend reading your work. And I pointed out to an article just before we started talking online that you had before the season with all the cap implications there for the Winnipeg Jets. And I think if I remember correctly, that one was also referenced by Paul Maurice in one of the news conferences there just before the season. So that shows again how Paul Maurice worked with the media, and a guy like you who does his job and who's covering the team very, very good and very close there gets also a heads up by the coach there. So thanks again, Murat. Happy holidays. As always in these times, stay safe and stay healthy. And thanks a lot for coming on the show.
My pleasure, Lars, and you too on all fronts. Thank you so much.
Sportliche Grüße. Das war's, euer Lars.
Wusstest du, dass TK Maxx immer die besten Markendeals hat? Duftkerzen für alle, Sportoutfits, stylische Pieces für dein Zuhause, Designer-Handtasche, check, check, check. Bei TK Maxx findest du große Marken zu unglaublichen Preisen. Psst. Im Onlineshop auf tkmaxx.de kannst du rund um die Uhr die besten Markendeals shoppen. TK Maxx, immer der bessere Deal im Store und online.
Ich habe mich natürlich schockverliebt, weil die war wirklich ganz, ganz klein.
So begann die Mensch-Hund-Beziehung zwischen Christina und Tierschutzhund Frieda. Und wie es danach, nach dem ersten Moment der Verliebtheit, so weiterging und welche Klippen es danach zu umschiffen galt, das hört ihr in der neuen Ausgabe von Iswas Dog, dem Podcast für harmonische Mensch-Hund-Beziehungen.
Iswas Dog mit Malte Asmus.
Überall, wo es Podcasts gibt.